Welcome to the Tech Meme Ride Home for Friday, April 26, 2024. I'm Brian McCullough. Today, net neutrality has been voted back into existence. Earnings from Microsoft and Google, but it's the YouTube numbers that continue to impress me. ByteDance claims it would rather be banned than sell U.S. TikTok. The Onion finds a benevolent billionaire. And of course, the weekend long read suggestions. Here's what you missed today in the world of tech. The FCC voted 3-2 yesterday to reinstate the U.S.'s net neutrality rules, expanding government oversight of internet service providers and aiming to protect consumer access to the internet. Quoting the New York Times, known as net neutrality, the regulations were first put in place nearly a decade ago under the Obama administration and are aimed at preventing internet service providers like Verizon or Comcast from blocking or degrading the delivery of services from competitors like Netflix and YouTube. The rules were repealed under President Donald Trump and have proved to be a contentious partisan issue over the years while pitting tech giants against broadband providers. In a 3-2 vote along party lines, the five-member commission appointed by President Biden revived the rules that declare broadband a utility-like service regulated like phones and water. The rules also give the FCC the ability to demand broadband providers report and respond to outages, as well as expand the agency's oversight of the provider's security issues. Jessica Rosenworcel, the chairwoman of the FCC and a Democrat, said the rules reflected the importance of high-speed internet as the main mode of communications for many Americans. Every consumer deserves internet access that is fast, open, and fair, Ms. Rosenworcel said. This is common sense. Broadband providers are expected to sue to try to overturn the reinstated rules. This is a non-issue for broadband consumers who have enjoyed an open internet for decades, said Jonathan Spalter, the president of a broadband lobbying group, U.S. Telecom. The organization said it would pursue all available options, including in the courts, end quote. Alphabet stock is up over 10% this morning after reporting revenue yesterday was up 15%. Net income was up 57% to a whopping $23.7 billion. Cloud revenue was up 28%. Headcount was down 5%. So they hit all of Wall Street's biggest bingo card squares. Alphabet also announced its first ever dividend and authorized the repurchase of up to an additional $70 billion of its shares, quoting Reuters. The Google parent is returning capital while spending billions of dollars on data centers to catch up with rivals on generative artificial intelligence. The dividend will be 20 cents per share. Just 3 months ago, Alphabet's big tech rival Meta Platforms announced its own first ever dividend, a move that lifted the social media company's stock market value by $196 billion the following day. Amazon is the lone holdout among big tech firms not offering a dividend. Alphabet beat expectations for the quarter in sales, profit, and advertising metrics that are all closely watched. Alphabet's announced dividend payouts and buybacks on top of the solid earnings beat are not only a breath of fresh air for the tech market as a whole, but also a very intelligent strategy for the search engine giant going into a tough time of the year, said Thomas Montanaro, senior analyst at investing.com, end quote. One more big thing that I still feel like people aren't paying enough attention to. YouTube's Q1 ad revenue climbed 21% year-over-year to $8.1 billion versus $7.72 billion estimated. This is the highest Q1 total for YouTube in history. So highest ever revenue number, growing at 21% per year. And that revenue number means that YouTube alone is now responsible for 11% of Google's total revenue. Microsoft shares were up a mere 3% this morning, but they're still fine. Revenue up 17%, Office commercial revenue up 13%, LinkedIn revenue up 10%, and all important, intelligent cloud revenue was up 21%, with Azure and other cloud services revenue up 31%. Sam Altman, Satya Nadella, Sundar Pichai, Jensen Huang, and others are joining a new panel to advise the U.S. DHS on the deployment of AI safely within America's critical infrastructure. Quoting the Journal, working with the Department of Homeland Security, it will develop recommendations for power grid operators, transportation service providers, and manufacturing plants, among others, on how to use AI while bulletproofing their systems against potential disruptions that could be caused by advances in the technology. In addition to NVIDIA's Wang, Microsoft's Nadella, Alphabet's Pichai, and other leaders in AI and technology, the panel of nearly two dozen consists of academics, civil rights leaders, and top executives at companies that work within a federally recognized critical infrastructure sector, including Kathy Warden, chief executive of Northrop Grumman, and Delta Airlines chief executive Ed Bastian. Other members are public officials such as Maryland Governor Wes Moore and Seattle Mayor Bruce Harrell, both Democrats. U.S. national security officials have long warned about the vulnerabilities to the nation's critical infrastructure, including potential physical attacks, cyber intrusions, and accidents. While AI could improve the efficiency and safety of fuel pipelines, communication networks, aviation, and hospitals, it could also create unanticipated problems, end quote. A report came out that ByteDance was considering selling a majority stake in its U.S. TikTok operations. ByteDance then came out and said, no way, no how. In fact, according to Reuters, sources say ByteDance would prefer a full TikTok shutdown in the U.S. rather than a sale if legal options fail them, deeming TikTok's algorithms as core to the overall ByteDance business. Quote, TikTok accounts for a small share of ByteDance's total revenues and daily active users, so the parent would rather have the app shut down in the U.S. in a worst-case scenario than sell it to a potential American buyer, they said. A shutdown would have limited impact on ByteDance's business, while the company would not have to give up its core algorithm, said the sources, who declined to be named as they were not authorized to speak to the media. It said late on Thursday in a statement posted on Taobao, a media platform it owns, that it had no plans to sell TikTok in response to an article by The Information, saying ByteDance is exploring scenarios for selling TikTok's U.S. business without the algorithm that recommends videos to TikTok users. In response to a Reuters request for comment, a TikTok spokesperson referred to ByteDance's statement posted on Taobao. TikTok's CEO, Shaozi Chu, said on Wednesday the social media company expects to win a legal challenge to block legislation signed into law by President Joe Biden that he said would ban its popular short video app used by 170 million Americans. Reuters interviewed more than half a dozen investment bankers who said it was tough to value how much TikTok is worth compared to like-for-like competitors Meta and Snap, while TikTok's financials are not widely available nor easy to access. TikTok shares the same core algorithms with ByteDance's domestic apps like short video platform Douyin, three of the sources said. Its algorithms are considered better than ByteDance rivals such as Tencent and others, said one of them. It would be impossible to divest TikTok with its algorithms as their intellectual property license is registered under ByteDance in China and thus difficult to disentangle from the parent company, said the sources. Moreover, separating the algorithms from TikTok's U.S. assets would be an extremely complicated procedure, and ByteDance is unlikely to consider that option, the sources added, end quote. I'm not sure how to express what I'm thinking here, but if you were a truly independent company and your U.S. arm of your money-losing sub-app could fetch maybe $100 billion on the open market, might you maybe consider just taking the money and running? But you'd need to be truly independent to do that, wouldn't you? This is a feel-good story. Former Twilio CEO and co-founder Jeff Lawson has bought The Onion from GO Media via his new company, Global Tetrahedron. Lawson had apparently long wanted to buy The Onion, and I mean, some billionaires buy The Washington Post or Time magazine, but billionaires buying The Onion to keep this vital national institution running, that I can get behind. Quoting The Times, the name Global Tetrahedron is, in true Onion fashion, a winking reference to a sinister fictional company featured in the book Our Dumb Century, which was written by the Onion staff and published in 1999. The real-life Global Tetrahedron is owned by Jeff Lawson, a co-founder and former chief executive of the technology communications company Twilio. The chief executive is Ben Collins, who was a senior reporter at NBC News until recently. In an interview, Mr. Lawson said that he had long wanted to buy The Onion and had pursued the project at various points in time before linking up with Mr. Collins, who started pondering the idea earlier this year. The world needs laughter. It needs satirical criticism more than ever, Mr. Lawson said, and that's why we think this is the right time and the right way to help The Onion continue to grow, continue to flourish, and frankly, I'm concerned that if we hadn't done this, I don't know what would have happened. Mr. Collins said audiences had a long-standing connection to The Onion and noted that many of the website's writers and editors had been there for years. Our goal is to be stewards for this thing, he said. We're keeping all the writers. We're going to work with the union. We're going to make it so they can hopefully get paid a little bit more money, and we're going to give them the room to grow. The new owners said they plan to improve user experience on the website and expand into multimedia, but otherwise wanted The Onion staff members to continue to do the work they've been doing. Mr. Lawson and Mr. Collins, who were in Chicago Thursday to meet The Onion's editorial staff, declined to disclose the deal price. Noah Schachtman, the former editor-in-chief of Rolling Stone, has advised on the project, according to two people with knowledge of the deal. The Onion is just an institution, Mr. Lawson said, adding, it should be preserved and it should be great. The website is the latest to be shed by GO Media, which still publishes a few stalwart internet brands like Gizmodo, The Root, and Quartz. In recent years, the company sold off Jezebel, Lifehacker, Deadspin, and the AV Club. GO Media was formed in 2019 by the private equity firm Great Hill Partners after it bought a collection of websites that were once part of Gawker Media, end quote. Whenever I need to do financial research for this show, for instance, during tech earnings season, when I have to analyze how various companies' stocks have been performing, I only ever turn to our sponsor today, Yahoo Finance. For more than 25 years, Yahoo Finance has been the brand behind every great investor. Whether you're a seasoned investor or are looking for that extra guidance, Yahoo Finance gives you all the tools and data you need in one place. They are the number one finance destination, producing a holistic look at the financial news cycle, including breaking news, original editorial perspectives, analyst ratings, independent research, customizable charts, and so much more. Securely link your brokerage accounts for a unified view of your wealth, including 401k and other investments. A comprehensive perspective is what sets apart great investors, and it's how Yahoo Finance ensures you have the insights to look at your wealth in its entirety. With a community of over 90 million users each month, their real strength is helping you on your way to financial success. For comprehensive financial news and analysis, visit the brand behind every great investor, yahoofinance.com, the number one financial destination, yahoofinance.com. That's yahoofinance.com. Let's be real for a minute. Most guys would wear a t-shirt every day of their lives if they could. The problem is that most t-shirts are not acceptable to wear at work or out on a hot date night. But today's sponsor, Cuts, has finally changed that. Cuts t-shirts are such high quality, wrinkle-free, and so buttery soft that you can look like you're dressing up even when you're dressing down. Yeah, you heard that. Wrinkle-free. You never have to substitute comfort for fashion ever again. If you see me in a t-shirt, it's likely one from Cuts. I'm also a huge fan of their AO five-pocket pants, the right sort of step-up from jeans without going all the way into dress pants, like literally my ideal Venn diagram of professional-looking but comfortable feeling. When you touch something from Cuts, you can immediately feel the quality. Their proprietary fabric blends are ridiculously soft and breathable, they don't wrinkle, and they look way more expensive than they actually are. For a limited time, our listeners get 20% off your entire order when you use code RIDE at checkout. That's 20% off your order at cutsclothing.com with promo code RIDE. Please support our show and tell them we sent you. Experience the perfect blend of style and comfort with Cuts Clothing. cutsclothing.com, promo code RIDE for 20% off. Time for the weekend long read suggestions. First up, the Financial Times has a summary out arguing that the CHIPS Act here in the U.S. has been surprisingly successful so far, giving the U.S. greater scope to meet critical infrastructure needs in the event of a crisis in East Asia. Quote, chip companies and supply chain partners have announced investments totaling $327 billion over the next 10 years, according to Semiconductor Industry Association calculations. U.S. statistics show a stunning 15-fold increase in construction of manufacturing facilities for computing and electronics devices. Debate about the CHIPS Act has focused on delays and manufacturing difficulties, but the vast volume of investment tells a different story. Pandemic-era shortages showed how small deficits of even lower-tech foundational chips could cause hundreds of billions of dollars of economic damage. The ensuing CHIPS Act aims to encourage construction of new chip fabrication facilities, or fabs, in the U.S. This will reduce reliance on a small number of Asian suppliers. Today, nearly all cutting-edge processors are made in Taiwan. The investment surge this has driven is reducing these vulnerabilities. Samsung, TSMC, and Intel, the world's leading chipmakers, are now building major new plants in the U.S. Intel will manufacture its most advanced chips there, while TSMC will introduce its cutting-edge 2-nanometer process in Arizona around 2 years after bringing it online in Taiwan. Commerce Secretary Gina Raimondo notes that by 2030, the U.S. will probably produce around 20% of the world's most advanced chips, up from zero today. This still won't mean complete self-sufficiency, given that the U.S. consumes over a quarter of the world's chips. Production of smartphones and consumer electronics would be disrupted in the event of a crisis in East Asia, an ever-looming fear. But this production would be roughly enough for the needs of critical infrastructure like data centers and telecoms. Chips aren't perfectly fungible, of course, and not every plant can easily produce every type, but the U.S. will have much more scope to manage shocks. Production in allied countries is helping too. Japan and Europe are investing in foundational chip capacity. Microchip and Analog Devices, another U.S. chipmaker, have both announced plans to shift some production from TSMC in Taiwan to the company's new plant in Japan, providing increased resilience against China risks, end quote. And then I found this one wild. The New Yorker took a look at the restaurant reservation ecosystem in New York City, where new apps have sprung up to help diners book a table at buzzy restaurants for a price. And thus the rise of, I guess, reservation scalpers? Quote, in May 2021, a 33-year-old software engineer named Jonas Frey couldn't get a reservation to renew his driver's license at the Nevada DMV, so he built a website to solve the problem. I thought, how is it possible that I can't pay for a spot in line, he told me. That July, after scoring a $22,000 break on rent from his landlord, maxing out his credit cards, and staying up all night coding in his underwear for 2 months, my wife is just bringing me Red Bull and pizza, he said, Frey launched Appointment Trader, an online marketplace for people to buy and sell reservations. Everything from private shopping experiences, the Hermes store in Paris, doctor's appointments, a hot commodity in Miami and Beverly Hills, and tables at restaurants all over the world. The website resembles an artifact from the early days of the internet, with its flashy banners and simple menus. It almost looks like eBay circa 1995. We get a lot of smack for it being ugly, Frey said, adding that it hasn't hurt business. Appointment Trader cleared almost $6 million in reservation sales during the past 12 months, a more than twofold increase from last year. New users create an account with their email address to buy or sell reservations. Sellers compete to earn trader points and medals, which allow them to upload more reservations and thereby make more money. Frey takes a 20 to 30% commission. Prospective buyers browse a list of restaurants organized by locale. Frey designed an algorithm that determines the most popular places based on reservation requests. In New York City, Fort Charles, Tatiana, an Afro-Caribbean place at Lincoln Center, and Coco Dock, Flatiron Korean Fried Chicken, currently top the list. Users can click around a glitchy Google Maps plugin or type a restaurant's name in the search bar. You can buy a limited selection of instantly available reservations, an indoor Friday night four-top at Don Angie, a modern village trattoria for $225, or place a bid for a restaurant and a time of your choosing. Then, individual resellers, for instance, Flirtatious Canvas 69, Expeditious Fork 45, can accept the bid and fulfill it by any means necessary. The buyer is informed of what name to give when he or she shows up to claim the table. This can lead to awkward moments at the host stand, particularly for couples on dates. Men sometimes are obliged to give other women's names and fumble for phone numbers, the name and number on the purchase reservation. The afternoon before I met Leventhal at Polo Bar, I logged in to Appointment Trader, which recommended that I place a bid of at least $355 for a two-top there, end quote. No bonus episodes for you this weekend. Talk to you on Monday.